Hello and welcome. This is Mark Weber. Thanks for joining me today. In this talk, I'm going to deal with a very, for many people, a very emotion-laden subject. The subject and the topic is Hitler's views on religion and the role of religion and Christianity in Third Reich Germany, and in a larger way, the role of Christianity during World War II and in our modern world. Now, for many people, this is a very emotional subject because for two reasons. First of all, in our society, as everyone knows, Hitler is portrayed in our educational system and even politically, even by our political leaders, as the personification of evil. And Third Reich Germany is routinely portrayed as the most wicked, awful regime in history. As a result, it's very, very routine for people to protest and show that their views are exactly the opposite of those of Hitler and Third Reich Germany. And you'll find over and over again that people who hold different, very contrasting, hostile views will each claim that the views of their adversaries are like those of Hitler and Nazi Germany. You'll find, for example, fervent fundamentalist Christians who are opposed to gay rights and homosexuality, claiming that, well, Hitler was really a homosexual, the Third Reich was a government made up of overt and sometimes covert homosexuals, and that Third Reich Germany was bad because it was just the opposite of what good thinking people ought to believe. And by the same token, you'll find people that are in favor of gay rights, homosexual rights, claiming and insisting, no, that Hitler's government was bad because it was oppressive against homosexuals and was suppressed gay rights, and that's why it's bad. And on, you'll find this over and over, so that some people will say George W. Bush, he's like Hitler, or other people say that Barack Obama is like Hitler, and so forth. And so it's very difficult for people to talk often very rationally, calmly, about the reality, not only of Hitler's views, but of the policies and attitudes and philosophy of the Third Reich. The other problem is the human tendency to judge the past, the behavior and attitudes of people in the past, by the standards of the present, according to the values that we have today. And so people will say, well, this person or that person in the past, he was bad because his views are very, very different than those we hold today. But this is also a simplistic, almost childish way of looking at the past. But let me get right to the center of this, that there's a tendency to view the Hitler regime and the Third Reich as bad on exactly that basis. People will say, well, if you're a sincere Christian, certainly you could not have supported the Hitler government because it was racist. Actually, in reality, as I'll probably talk about in another broadcast, the racial policies of Germany during the Third Reich period were actually far less quote-unquote racist than those of many other countries. But the point is that, well, they say, well, if a country is racist, Hitler was racist, therefore it's bad, it's evil. But those people who say that are routinely unable to apply those same standards to any other society or any other regime in the past. If Hitler or Third Reich Germany is evil or bad because it's racist, well, the same people who say that are unwilling to say that America is evil, and American presidents and leaders have been bad, really unchristian men because they held what by today's standards would be racist views. To be even more explicit about it, to say, well, Hitler's bad because he's racist, well, then by that same token, George Washington or Thomas Jefferson or Abraham Lincoln, Woodrow Wilson, Calvin Coolidge, Andrew Jackson, and so on and so forth, by those same standards, certainly should be equally fervently condemned as wicked and evil and racist in the same way. And then there are people who say, well, Hitler and the Third Reich government were bad and wicked and evil because their policies were anti-Jewish, because they removed Jews in the 1930s from political life and cultural life and so forth. And during the war, of course, the policy was even much more harsh, massive deportation and so forth of Jews, and that shows how bad it is. Well, those people who say that, again, are not willing to apply the same standard themselves to other countries. After all, for centuries and centuries in Europe, the policies of discrimination, of segregation of Jews, was one that was upheld and laid out in policy by Christian leaders, and notably by the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church, the Vatican, and Christian leaders across Europe ordered that Jews had to wear special markings or badges or clothing to distinguish themselves from the non-Jewish population. And throughout Europe, Jews were required to live in special residential areas, in ghettos. And this wasn't something that just was carried out by a small minority. These policies were official ones that were backed and supported by the Christian leaders at the time. And that was true not only in Catholic Europe, but also in Protestant Europe as well. One of the most revered figures in British history is Queen Elizabeth I, Good Queen Bess, she's called. And she was, of course, the monarch of England when Britain was defending itself against a possible takeover by the Spanish, by King Philip II and the Spanish Armada. And she's considered, it was also a period of great cultural blossoming in Europe during that time. Well, by today's standards, Queen Elizabeth would be considered a horrible anti-Semite and a religious bigot, wicked, because during the Elizabethan period, it was a crime, illegal for anyone to be a outgoing, proselytizing Catholic, for example. Those people who were open Catholics during the Elizabethan period were put to death. And even more than that, not only was the regime anti-Jewish, it was a crime to be a Jew in Elizabethan England. But people today tend not to look at Elizabethan England in the same way that they look at Third Reich Germany. They hold Hitler and Germany to a standard far more exacting, far more critical than they do of other eras, including the United States in its own history. Well, the real, as a result of this very skewed view, there's a lot of nonsense about the Hitler's views on religion and the Third Reich policy of religion and the role of Christianity and religion in the Third Reich on the internet and in libraries and in books that are widely available. They tend to reflect an objective or dispassionate reality. They tend to reflect the prejudices and the outlook of those people who are doing the writing. One person who has written, I think, with a great deal of insight on this issue is a historian named Richard Steigman Gall, who wrote a book titled The Holy Reich, published in 2003. And he makes a very good point in his book. He makes the point that the Third Reich was not anti-Christian in any real objective sense, certainly far less so than many other regimes at the time that nobody really cares about very much. And he writes this: What we suppose Nazism must surely have been about usually tells us as much about contemporary societies as about the past purportedly under review. I would add that when people are talking about Nazism, it tells them not so much about contemporary societies as about their own views, their own values. He goes on, "The insistence that Nazism was an anti-Christian movement has been one of the most enduring truisms of the past 50 years. In other words, it's simply accepted by many people that the Third Reich was anti-Christian. Exploring the possibility that many Nazis regarded themselves as Christian would have decisively undermined the myths of the Cold War and the regeneration of the German nation. Nearly all Western societies retain a sense of Christian identity to this day. And therefore," he writes, "that Nazism, as the world metaphor for human evil and wickedness, should in some way have been related to Christianity, can therefore be regarded by many only as unthinkable." You know, his point being, of course, that to regard Hitler's Germany as anything other than wicked or evil is unthinkable because it calls into question basic assumptions about our own life and our own times and our own values. So in this broadcast, I'm going to try to talk about what were Hitler's views about Christianity and religion, what did Christians in Germany and Europe think of Hitler and National Socialist Germany, and during World War II, what countries were really Christian and which were not? What was the role of Christianity or religion during the great conflict of World War II? Now, a bit by way of background. The German population during the 1930s was overwhelmingly Christian and divided into two great denominations. Overwhelmingly, people were members of either the Lutheran Protestant Church, what they called the Evangelical Church, or Evangelical Lutheran Church, and in southern Germany, again there are exceptions, but in southern Germany the population was very largely, overwhelmingly Roman Catholic. And the population of Germany has always remained about half and half between those two great denominations. During the 1930s, in the years just after Hitler took power, religious feeling and sensibility was far stronger in Germany than it is today. It's been eroded a great deal in the years since World War II, under the impact of America, under the impact of materialism, and the values promoted since the end of World War II. But it's safe to say that the population of Germany when Hitler took power and during the 1930s and during World War II was, by and large, far more Christian in its sensibility, Christian in its outlook, than it is today in Germany. It's been much more secularized in recent years, reflecting the attitudes especially promoted by the United States and also by the Soviet Union since the end of the Second World War. It's important to remember that Hitler became Chancellor of Germany in early 1933, not through some intrigue or through taking power by force, but because the party that he led, the National Socialist German Workers' Party, was by far the largest political party in Germany that had shown its popularity and its support in election campaign after election campaign. In the democratic period of the Weimar Republic, the National Socialist Party won by far the largest number of seats in the national parliament, and that's why Hitler was entrusted in January 1933 with the chancellorship. Now, the membership of Hitler's National Socialist Party was overwhelmingly Christian. Perhaps 95, 96, 97% of the membership of the National Socialist Party was made up of men and women who regarded themselves as Christians. They were either Catholics or Lutherans, but they were other denominations as well. But the National Socialist Party was a broad-based political party and included people who were not Christian, some even anti-Christian. Now, the party program itself, that was laid out by Hitler back in the 1920s was a one of the pillars of the program stated that the National Socialist Party supported what it called positive Christianity. Now, that was deliberately vague, but it was open. Positive Christianity is kind of open to interpretation. But it's important to contrast that with the other major political parties in Germany at that time. There were, in addition to the National Socialist Party, there were specifically Catholic political parties in Germany that were the parties of the Catholic population and the Catholic leadership in Germany. And Protestants, many of them, conservative Protestants, supported another party, the German National People's Party. But there were the two other important political parties before Hitler took power were overtly, openly anti-Christian, anti-religious. And they were, of course, the Communist Party, which was explicitly atheist, and the Social Democratic Party, which the party program was a Marxist one. And of course, Marxism was not only non-Christian, non-religious, it was anti-Christian, anti-religious. And the Social Democratic Party was the second largest political party in Germany. So that's something of the background and the context. As a result, one of the difficulties in trying to look at what did the Nazis think is a difficult one, because you'll find people picking and choosing and quoting from this leader or that person or this person to make their point. And this is misleading, because prominent individuals within the National Socialist Party did not represent necessarily the views of the party. There's a very, very common tendency to say what the Nazis thought or felt based upon the views of this or that person. And that's entirely misleading, in fact, really deceitful. For example, a very prominent National Socialist figure was Alfred Rosenberg. And he was a close colleague of Hitler, and he had an important role in the government. And his book was rather anti-Christian. It was called The Mythos of the 20th Century. He wrote other things as well. And the Catholic Church condemned it, criticized it, and so forth. But Alfred Rosenberg, his views on Christianity were not official ones. They were his views, and people were allowed to express those views. So that after the National Socialist Party took power in Germany, even though it was explicitly stood for what's called positive Christianity, it was a government that also supported the principle of religious rights, religious freedom, individual conscience with regard to religion, so that people could and did hold very, very different views about religion, and that was not only permitted but even encouraged, while at the same time the party did try to support and strengthen the role of Christianity in German public life, as I'll explain. So at this point, I'm going to quote from some public statements by Hitler about religion, and to show not only what his views were, but what they were meant as expressions of public policy, especially after the National Socialist Party and Hitler took power in 1933. Now, already in the book Mein Kampf, Hitler wrote, and this is kind of a typical statement, he wrote something like, "Hence today, I believe that I am acting in accordance with the will of the Almighty Creator. By defending myself against the Jew, I am fighting for the work of the Lord." Now, that's an example of the way in which Hitler would talk about his attitude and so forth. He's not talking here in any great detail, and he doesn't in Mein Kampf, about his religious views in great detail. But he believed that the opposition to Jewish power and its role in Germany was consistent with the will of God, that it was a just and good thing. But he had to become much more explicit about what this all meant in actual policy after he became chancellor in 1933. In his first major address to the country, on February 1st, 1933, just 2 days after being named chancellor, he made a kind of inaugural statement to the nation. And among other things, he said, the national government, that is the government that was in power, not only the National Socialist Party, but in coalition with the German National People's Party, will regard it as its first and foremost duty to revive in the nation the spirit of unity and cooperation. It will preserve and defend those basic principles on which our nation has been built. It regards Christianity as the foundation of our national morality and the family as the basis of national life. Well, Hitler expanded on those views in the months and years ahead and acted in accordance with them. 2 weeks later, in response to a criticism that had been made of him and the National Socialist Party by an official, I think it was in the Catholic in southern state of Bavaria, Hitler said this, and this was in a speech in February 15, 1933 in Stuttgart, and now Staatspräsident Bolz says that Christianity is in danger and that the Catholic faith is threatened. That is, he's saying that the new government of Hitler is threatening Christianity. And Hitler says, and to this charge I can answer, in the first place, it is Christians and not international atheists who now stand at the head of Germany. I do not merely talk of Christianity. I also profess that I will never ally myself with the parties that aim to destroy Christianity. If many wish today to take threatened Christianity under their protection, where, I would ask, was Christianity for them in those 14 years when they went arm in arm with atheism? Now, I want to point out here, what he's talking about is the 14 years when Germany was ruled by a parliamentary democratic system. And very often the government that was in power during those years was a coalition government of the Catholic Center Party, the Protestant National Social, German People's Party, and the Social Democratic Party. But the Social Democratic Party was an atheist party, a non-religious, non-Christian, even anti-Christian party. But it operated and acted in coalition with parties that regarded themselves as Christian. And Hitler's making the point that those people that are critical of his party had nothing to say, or were not critical of the fact that during the 14 years of the Weimar Republic, they didn't criticize the fact that these supposedly Christian parties were in collaboration, in coalition, with overtly, openly non-Christian or anti-Christian parties. He went on, no, never mind, and at no time was greater damage done to Christianity, he says, than in those 14 years when the Christian parties sat side by side in the same government with those who denied the very existence of God. Germany's entire cultural life was shattered and contaminated in this period. It should be our task to burn out these manifestations of degeneracy in literature, theater, schools, and the press, that is, in our entire culture, and to eliminate the poison which has been permeating every facet of our lives for these past 14 years. Well, similarly, a few weeks later, on March 23, 1933, in a major address to the Reichstag, Hitler said again, the national government, that is the new government that he headed, regards the two Christian confessions, that is Catholicism and Lutheranism, Lutheran Protestantism, as factors essential to the soul of the German people. We hold the spiritual forces of Christianity to be indispensable elements in the moral uplift of most of the German people. And then in a radio address later that year, in October, Hitler said, for 8 months, we have been waging a heroic battle against the communist threat to our nation, the decomposition of our culture, the subversion of our art, and the poisoning of our public morality. We have put an end to denial of God and abuse of religion. We owe Providence humble gratitude for not allowing us to lose our battle against the misery of unemployment and for the salvation of the German farmer. Well, indeed, by October of 1933, the two major anti-Christian political parties in Germany, the Communist Party and the Social Democratic Party, had been made illegal. They had been dissolved. By the same token, the Catholic and Protestant political parties in Germany had also been dissolved. But this was also as part of an agreement with the Catholic Church, the so-called Concordat, that the Catholic Church and Catholic leaders agreed that henceforth the Catholic Church would not play a role in the political life of Germany. And this Concordat was consistent with this. And Hitler stayed true to this principle in the years that followed. Well, we'll take a break at this point and come back with the second half of this broadcast. Hello and welcome back. This is Mark Weber. Thank you for joining me for the second half of this broadcast on the role of Christianity and religion in the Third Reich, Hitler's views about religion, and the role of Christianity and religion during World War II. I was quoting from public addresses by Hitler about religion and about the policy of the National Socialist Government during the years of the Third Reich, and I had been quoting from a speech in 1933 in October. It was later that same month that Hitler made another statement, some days later, in a public speech in Berlin, in which he said, "We are convinced that the people need and require this faith. We have therefore undertaken the fight against the atheistic movement, and that not merely with a few theoretical declarations, we have stamped it out." As I mentioned before, it was within 1 year the new National Socialist Government had eliminated all other political parties. They had been dissolved, or in many cases they dissolved themselves. But notably, what he's referring to here is the elimination of the non-religious or anti-religious Social Democratic and Communist Party. But in addition to that, militantly atheistic organizations were also banned. In a New Year's address to the nation on January 1st, 1934, Hitler said this: "While we destroyed the Center Party," that is, he's referring to the main Roman Catholic political party, "we have not only brought thousands of priests back into the church, but to millions of respectable people, we have restored their faith in their religion and in their priests. The union of the Evangelical Church," that is the Lutheran Church, "in a single church for the whole Reich, the Concordat," that is the treaty or agreement with the Catholic Church and the Vatican, "these are but milestones on the road which leads to the establishment of a useful relation and a useful cooperation between the Reich and the two major denominations." A few months after that, already also in 1934, he said this: "Finally, I would like to say something to those people who keep talking to me about religion. I am also religious, profoundly religious on the inside, and I believe that Providence weighs us human beings." I'm going to go on a little bit later more about Hitler's inner views on religion and his private statements in this regard. But it's remarkable that his public statements and his private statements were consistent in that way. In a speech on June 26, 1934, Hitler said, "The National Socialist State professes its allegiance to positive Christianity. It will be its honest endeavor to protect both the great Christian confessions," that is, the great denominations, Catholicism and Lutheran, in their rites, "to secure them from interference with their doctrines or their teachings, and in their duties to constitute a harmony with the views and exigencies of the state of today." Well, then he, in a speech a few years later at Nuremberg in September 6, 1938, Hitler explicitly rejected and condemned cultic, occult, mystical movements within the National Socialist Party. Now, there's a very, very common tendency to portray the National Socialist Movement and Nazis as cultic and occult and so forth, and calling up occult spirits and so forth. And there's a lot of nonsense on television and on the internet to promote this view. Now, it is true that there were some within the National Socialist Movement who did cultivate and favor that kind of outlook. But Hitler was not one of them, and certainly the party as such did not do that. But there's a very, very common tendency to take the views or the attitudes or the behavior of this particular person or that person, say Rudolf Hess, Alfred Rosenberg, or Heinrich Himmler, and to portray that as typical or representative of the National Socialist Party as a whole, or the Third Reich as a whole, and that's entirely wrong and misleading. But in the speech in 1938, Hitler explicitly said, "National Socialism is not a cult movement, a movement for worship. It is exclusively a folkish political doctrine based upon racial principles. In its purpose, there is no mystic cult, only the care and leadership of a people defined by a common blood relationship. We will not allow mystically minded occult folk with a passion for exploring the secrets of the world beyond to steal into our movement. Such people are not National Socialists, but something else. In any case, something which has nothing to do with us. At the head of our program, there stand no secret surmises, but clear-cut perception and straightforward profession of belief. But since we set as the central point of this perception and of this profession of belief the maintenance and hence the security for the future of being formed by God, we thus serve the maintenance of a divine work and fulfill a divine world will, not in the secret twilight of a new house of worship, but openly before the face of the Lord. Our worship is exclusively the cultivation of the natural, and for that reason, because natural, therefore God willed. Our humility is the unconditional submission before the divine laws of existence, so far as they are known to us men." And this is similar, by the way, to the view of, say, Thomas Jefferson, expressed in the Declaration of Independence. Rights come from God or from God, from nature. And there was a strong emphasis by Hitler and also by the National Socialist Movement on understanding nature and rejecting mystical, occultic, non-rational, non-reality-based views. One of the most important discussions about religion came in a major speech to the German Parliament, the Reichstag, on January 30th, 1939. Now, Hitler was very aware, of course, of the tremendous propaganda against the Third Reich in foreign countries, particularly in the United States, and particularly by Jewish-owned, Jewish-controlled media in the United States, Hollywood and so forth, which was already putting out a tremendous amount of very, very hostile portrayals of the Third Reich and of National Socialism. And in order to get support from many people in the United States, the media, many people in the media and political leaders portrayed Hitler's government as hostile to or opposed to religion and Christianity. And so, in his speech in January 30th, 1939, Hitler dealt explicitly with this point. He said, "Among the accusations made today against Germany in the so-called democracies is the charge that the National Socialist State is hostile to religion. In answer to that charge, I should like to make before the German people this solemn declaration. First, no one in Germany has in the past been persecuted because of his religious views, nor will anyone in the future be so persecuted." Now, I just parenthetically at this point, I want to make the point that yes, some people who were religious leaders were arrested. One of the most well-known was a Lutheran pastor named Martin Niemöller, but he wasn't arrested or because of his religious views, but because of his explicit statements against the state and because of his involvement in political activity, not just merely religious views. And so Hitler was telling the truth when he made the point that people were not persecuted. Nobody was being persecuted because of his religious views, and nobody would be in the future. Second, he went on, the National Socialist State, since January 30, 1933, from public monies derived from taxation through the organs of the state, has placed at the disposal of both churches the following sums. And he talks about how in the year 1933, 130 million Reichsmarks was transferred to the Catholic and the Lutheran churches and other churches. And this amount increased steadily over the years. In 1934, 170 million Reichsmarks. 1935, 250 million Reichsmarks. 1936, 320 million Reichsmarks. That is more than double the amount from 1933. In 1937, this amount had increased to 400 million. And then in 1938, last year, before he gave the speech, 500 million Reichsmarks were given. In addition, he went on, there has been paid over some 85 million Reichsmarks each year from contributions of the separate states, that is, within Germany, states like Bavaria, Saxony, Prussia, and so forth, and some 7 million Reichsmarks from contributions of the parishes and parish associations, that is, on local levels. Further, the church in the National Socialist State is in many ways favored in regard to taxation and for gifts, legacies, and it enjoys immunity from taxation. Again, that was typical of the kind of preferential or special favorable treatment that the religious institutions received during the Third Reich. It is, he then went on in this speech, to put it mildly, effrontery, when especially foreign politicians make bold to speak of hostility to religion in the Third Reich. But if it be true that the German churches regard this position as intolerable, the National Socialist State is at any time ready to undertake a clear separation between church and state, as is already the case in France, America, and some other countries. I would allow myself only one question. What contributions during the same period of France, England, or the United States made through the state from public funds? Now, the point he's making here is that in Third Reich Germany, there was not, as in the United States, a clean separation of church and state. There was a interrelationship between the two, so that the state helped support the major religious denominations, and for their part, the major religious churches also supported the state. Whereas in the United States at that time, and today, and in France as well, and in some other countries, there was a sharp distinction between the two. Then he went on, the National Socialist State has not closed a church, nor has it prevented the holding of a religious service, nor has it ever exercised any influence upon the form of religious service. It has not exercised any pressure upon the doctrine, nor on the profession of faith of any of the denominations. In the National Socialist State, anyone is free to seek the blessedness, his blessedness, after his own fashion. I want to mention at this point that this is a reference to people who were better educated, to a famous statement by the Prussian king Frederick the Great, who said at one point that everyone can be blessed in his own fashion. In other words, there was no interference by the state on individual conscience and professions of faith. He went on, it is, however, true that if priests, instead of being servants of God, prefer to regard their ministry, their mission, the abuse of our present Reich, its institutions, or its leaders, then the National Socialist State will relentlessly force them to realize that no one will be suffered to destroy this state, and that priests, as soon as they set themselves beyond the law, will, by the law, be brought to account precisely in the same way as any other German citizen. But it must be at this point established that there are tens, thousands, and ten thousands of priests of all Christian confessions who perform their ecclesiastical duties just as well as probably better than the political agitators without ever coming into conflict with the laws of the state. To protect these, the state regards as its task the destruction of the enemies of the state it regards as its duty. Hitler went on in a speech in January 30th, 1942. He concluded a very, very lengthy, detailed, and also a very moving speech, I think, with these words: "Lord God, give us the strength." And this is again during World War II, beginning of 1942, during the war. "Lord God, give us the strength that we may retain our liberty for our children and our children's children, not only for ourselves, but also for the other peoples of Europe. For this is a war which we wage this time not for our German people alone. It is a war for all of Europe, and with it, in the long run, for all of mankind." And finally, I'm going to quote from a speech he made in November 8, 1943. Hitler said, "I too am religious, that is, religious deep inside, and I believe that Providence weighs as human beings, and that he who is unable to pass the test of Providence, but is destroyed by it, has not been destined for greater things." Well, those are public statements about the Third Reich. I want to just mention that years ago I spent quite a bit of time looking at periodicals, newspapers, and so forth, from Third Reich Germany, newspapers published in Berlin and Munich and other major German cities, to get a flavor of at least as much as one can from these periodicals. And I was astonished, for example, to see in one Berlin newspaper a notice, an announcement or advertisement for some person from India who was visiting Germany, or maybe he lived there, who was giving lectures on Hinduism and urging people to support this Hindu philosophy of life. Much as the same way you'll see people in the United States promoting this or that kind of odd or minority religious view. But that was permitted in Germany during that period. And people were free to, if they wanted to be Buddhists or Hindus or Islam or non-religious or whatever. Again, on the matter of religion, this was up to the individual. Even though, as already mentioned, there was a relationship, not as close as a relationship in some countries, but a relationship between the two major religious denominations and the state. Now, in his personal life, Hitler's private views about religion are not exactly the same. The statements that Hitler made publicly about religion were consistent with his private views, but they're not exactly the same. Hitler emphasizes in his public statements the general role of religion, of support for positive Christianity, of support for the major Christian denominations in Germany, but his private views were not precisely the same. Now, Hitler was raised a Catholic. He sang in a church choir as a boy. His mother was a devout Catholic. His father was rather skeptical about religion. But Hitler went to Mass as a boy, and reportedly, there's different reports about this, he apparently continued to go to Mass and receive sacraments even during World War I. Other people say he stopped earlier than that. But he stopped being overt about Catholicism even after that. But that's typical of many people in Europe, or even in the United States, who regard themselves as Christian or whatever, without being very overt about it or going to church. He was a personal friend of his was a Catholic priest, Bernard Stempfle, a Bavarian who reportedly not only was close friend of Hitler's, but advised him and helped him with the draft text of his book, Mein Kampf. One of the most important Catholic leaders in Germany during those years was Cardinal Michael von Faulhaber. He was the Archbishop of Munich, an imposing, very educated, very influential man. And he certainly wasn't a National Socialist in his outlook. There were many differences in his views. But he he's an important figure, not only because he was very perceptive and played a responsible role in the religious life of Germany during that time, but because of what he had to say both publicly and privately. Now, in 1933, as already mentioned, the National Socialist government signed a concordat with the Vatican. This was the first time that this had ever happened. There had been similar agreements or treaties between the Vatican and some individual German states, but never one for the all of Germany. Now, as part of this agreement, the Catholic Church agreed, the Vatican agreed, that Catholics would no longer play any role in political life. And this is one of the reasons why many Catholics readily accepted the dissolution of the Center Party, the Catholic, main Catholic political party, and in Bavaria, the so-called Bavarian People's Party, which was also a overtly Catholic political party, because there was no more need for it, given it was redundant and unnecessary, given the fact that the relationship between the Catholic Church and the state had been settled and laid out in the Concordat. And it also required not only that Catholics refrain from involvement in political life, but also it agreed that the state would have a role in being able to veto or have some say in who was appointed as bishops or high-level Catholic officials in Germany. Now, Cardinal Fallhaber, who was the archbishop, he was, of course, very supportive of this agreement with the Concordat, sent a note of congratulations to Hitler, and he wrote, "What the old parliaments and parties did not accomplish in 60 years, your statesmanlike foresight has achieved in 6 months. For Germany's prestige in East and West and before the whole world, this handshake with the papacy, the greatest moral force in the history of the world, is a feat of immeasurable blessing." And he ended the note with a wish coming from the bottom of my heart, "May God preserve the Reich Chancellor for our people." In November 1936, Cardinal Fallhaber met privately with Hitler at his mountain retreat near Berchtesgaden in Bavaria. And they were alone together for 3 hours, a three-hour conversation. Fallhaber was impressed with Hitler, and he wrote a confidential memorandum about his meeting and discussions with Hitler. It was a confidential report in which he said that that Hitler undoubtedly lives in belief in God, that he recognizes Christianity as the builder of Western culture. And he also said that Hitler spoke openly, confidentially, emotionally at times, in a spiritual way, lashing out at Bolshevism, Soviet communism, and at the role of Jews in German and Western life. He said that, in this confidential paper, that Hitler is in better command of diplomatic and social etiquette than a born sovereign, and he spoke of Hitler's simplicity of manner. Now, this was not just some tremendous act. This does reflect what Hitler's views, I think, really were, because they're expressed on other occasions in both private and public life to others. A few weeks after this meeting, the Catholic leaders of Germany issued a pastoral letter that was read by priests in all German Catholic churches, and it was entitled "On the Defense Against Bolshevism" in all the pulpits in January 1937. And in this pastoral letter, the Catholic leaders of Germany said this, quote, "Bolshevism has begun its march from Russia to the countries of Europe." That's, by the way, a reference above all to the civil war then going on in Spain, in which the rebels or the loyalists were to a large degree and increasingly under the control and of Soviets, of communists. "The fateful hour has come," the pastoral letter goes on, "for our nation and for the Christian culture of the Western world. The Führer and Chancellor Adolf Hitler saw the march of Bolshevism from afar and turned his mind and energies toward averting this enormous danger. The German bishops consider it their duty to do their utmost to support the leader of the Reich with every available means in this defense." Now, Hitler's views on religion, though, on a private level, increasingly as the war went on, became more and more critical of Christianity in its practical application and how it really manifests itself in life. And his views on religion were much more deist than they were Christian, especially as time went on. But this is, interestingly enough, similar to the religious views of many in American public life. I think that Hitler's views on religion were very similar to the private views on religion of Abraham Lincoln, or of Thomas Jefferson, and certainly of Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin regarded himself as a deist. That is, he believed in God, but in a kind of impersonal God, in a God that is the great sort of maker of the world, but plays not such a big role, if at all, in the personal day-to-day lives of human beings. And this is the view also that Abraham Lincoln has had. In recent years, it's very difficult to say what the religious views sincerely held of American political leaders. But more importantly than that, is the role that Christianity had during World War II. And this is a fascinating, remarkable subject that I will deal with in another broadcast, and I hope you'll join me for that and the next Mark Weber Report.